Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Come, 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 come along now. Run away from the humdrum. We'll go to a place that is safe from greed, anger, and boredom.
From newsounds.org and our studios at WNYC, I'm John Schaefer with another live performance in our Soundcheck podcast series. This time, it's the singer, musician, and composer Cosmo Sheldrake. Now, he has an unusual name, but he has an album to match. It's called The Much Much How How and I, and it's full of eccentric, strangely alluring songs about nature and nonsense. You may be familiar with this song, which was used this year in a very popular iPhone ad, but the whole album is full of surprises, and while it is Cosmo Sheldrake's debut LP, he's been here before with an earlier EP, and in fact, the song Cosmo's going to start us off with today is from that earlier collection. Here is The Fly.
Summers play, my thoughtless hand has brushed away. Am I not a fly like thee, or art thou not a man like me? For I dance and drink and sing, till some blind hand shall brush thy wing. Thought is life and strength and breath, and the want of thought is death. Then I am a happy fly, if I live or if I die. Then I am a happy fly, if I live or if I die. Then I am a happy. If I live or if I die, then I am a happy man. If I live or if I die. Fly thy summer's play, my thoughtless hand has brushed away. Am I not a fly like thee, or art thou not a man like me? For I dance and drink and sing, till some blind hand shall brush thy wing. Thought is life and strength and breath, and the want of thought is death. Then I am a happy fly, if I live or if I die. Then I am a happy fly, if I live or if I die. Then I am a happy. If I live or if I die, then I am a happy one. If I live or if I die.
That should just be the most annoying song ever, because you can hear the fly buzzing so clearly at the end there, and yet I can't be annoyed. I'm sitting here with a big grin on my face. Cosmo Sheldrake with The Fly. Nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
So you write lots of songs where those lyrics would have fit right in with a Cosmo Sheldrake songwriting collection, but in fact that's William Blake, right?
Yeah, it's a poem by William Blake that I set to music.
But, you know, like the tiger and the lamb. It's not really about animals, is it?
Well, for me, it's about this kind of moment of this kind of almost radical empathetic exchange between a human and a fly. So he kind of imagines himself as the fly and the fly as him. And so it's this kind of shape-shifting quality.
Yeah. And some of the sounds, aside from the obvious buzzing of the fly towards the end there, when the song is getting going, what were some of the samples that you were playing?
So it's built from a few things. It features a recording of the sun that was made by some astrophysicists by recording the sun slowly oscillating over a period of 2 months and speeding it up by 46,000 times and turning it into an audio frequency. So this is the sound of the sun here. And that goes on forever. So, I mean, that's sort of 2 months in the life of the sun sped up. And then the beat is made from recordings I made in Wales by smashing slates up a mountain near Snowdonia. But most of the sounds are the sound of tumbling slates being smashed in a cloud up a mountain. And then it features a sample from some Akapigmi singers from Cameroon, which is that sound there.
Right. It's a great combination and a very, I mean, with a new album in tow, I can see why you went back to this earlier song, because it's something that you can do with this table full of gear and, you know, the microphones and the looping and stuff. With the record, with the Much Much How How and I, you know, a lot of these songs are splashed on the canvas with lots of woodwinds and horns and, you know, there's like a big kind of demented circus band sound. You play a lot of those instruments yourself, right?
Yeah, a lot of them, yeah. I did them. So I wrote a lot of the parts and played them myself. At the end, I did get some musicians to come and record. So I had a brass band for a while and some really great oboe players and stuff. So yeah, I got it sort of decorated at the end. But yeah.
But you figured out a way to play some of these songs in this kind of solo setting as well.
Yeah.
So how big a deal was the song Come Along being pegged for the iPhone ad? How big a deal was that for you?
It was. I mean, when they first got in touch, I got an email out of the blue from someone at Apple.com. And it took me a good while to actually. I mean, for a long time, I still thought this could be some elaborate hoax, you know. So I didn't know how to take it seriously. But yeah, it's just one of those things. It's so surreal, actually, how, you know, it doesn't actually affect your day. I don't know. It's just this one of those things that feels so abstract and surreal for so long. But yeah, it's been quite exciting and interesting to watch what's happened since. Yeah,
and it's been fascinating to watch people discover your music through this, because they come to hear Come Along and then they get all of these songs about nature and animals. And we talked about this the last time you were here, but you're from a family of biologists, essentially, right?
Yeah.
So you didn't really avoid the family business. You just found a different way around in it.
Totally. Well, I studied anthropology and ended up spending a lot of my time writing about scientists, but through a kind of anthropological lens. So yeah, I guess I've always been thinking about scientists, but just not from a scientific perspective, I guess.
Now, your dad is Rupert Sheldrake. Your brother actually appears on the record at one point, doesn't he?
I think in a couple of places, yeah. He's called Merlin Sheldrake, and he's currently writing a book about fungi. He's a mycologist.
So mushrooms. So there are no Toms or Bills or Michaels in the family. It's all
not in our immediate family, no.
But the idea of kind of drawing on nature, I mean, it's obviously important now. And you did this really interesting thing, this kind of polyphonic musical intervention in May for the Extinction Rebellion. Tell us about that.
Well, I've been interested in trying to make music for multi-channel systems for a while, just because for me it much more accurately reflects the way we actually listen to the world. And everything, wherever you are, has all sorts of sound sources coming from every single angle. And I've also been working a lot with sounds of endangered species and kind of thinking a lot about extinction. So I tried to, I used lots of different sounds of endangered British birds and then arranged it for, worked with a friend of mine to create this software that I had to just hold up a QR code and everyone in the crowd could then hold their phones, get taken to a website. They could pick one of four sections of the music, and at 7 o'clock exactly on Waterloo Bridge,
the music would start streaming in four parts on everyone's phones with speakers plugged in. So basically, it was this kind of evening chorus made from Endangered British Birdsong in four-part sections, basically. So that's what happened.
But yeah, and it's a lovely idea, but then to kind of bring us back down to earth at the end, you actually named some of the birds on the endangered species list. I couldn't believe the skylark, the bittern, I mean, the barn owl. I mean, these are like, you know, birds that we think have been around forever and will be around forever.
I know, it's terrifying, really. Yeah, some of the most common, you know, what we've always associated as, I mean, some of them even have common in the name, you know. So it's like, it's quite dramatic and terrifying. Yeah.
Speaking of names, the much, much, how, how, and I mean, you do quote from Jabberwocky at one point in. So is this kind of in that vein of sort of the nonsensical use of semantic words?
I guess so. It came really from it came way before any of the music did. It was from years ago. I was working with a friend of mine, Nadia Cheney, who's an amazing poet and facilitator, and she'd come up with this game called Oracular Poetry. I guess quite like some of Burroughs's cut and paste poetry. So you free write on a question in your mind for 3 minutes, chop out all of the words and give them to your neighbour, and your neighbour then glues them back in and makes a poem using some or all or arranging them back in some way and then gives it back to you, and in some way it kind of reflects or shines a light on the question you were answering. And the very last lines in the poem he gave back to me from my own words was the much, much, how, how, and I. So it kind of hit me then. I was like, well, if I ever make a record, I think I'm going to call it that.
And how long ago was this?
Oh, this is, I mean, years ago. This is about 8-9 years ago.
So we're speaking with Cosmo Sheldrake. The album is called The Much, Much, How, How, and I. And Cosmo will be back here in New York on Thursday, September 26th, playing at Le Poisson Rouge. Is that likely to be this table full of gear that you have in front of you?
Yeah.
Seems to work. You want to do one of the new songs for us?
Sure. Yes.
Pliocene. This is like what? Several million years ago, right?
Yes.
It's not the current era, but the one before.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a song really about deep time and also about extinction. And it features a sound that I sampled from a recording made by Bernie Krause, the great soundscape ecologist. Of a recording he made of a raven in Algonquin National Park, which I'll just play here. This is the raven sound. So it's all built from that, and the beat is made from recordings of fish that were recorded by the American military during the Cold War.
For what purpose?
I think so they could distinguish between Soviet submarines and fish.
And a school of fish.
Yeah, I mean, okay. They do make some pretty extraordinary sounds. So this, that's an oyster toadfish on the kick drum, and then the snare drum is a bucktooth parrotfish. Just goes around chewing coral reefs, which are critically endangered ecosystems at the moment. So they're both fish from coral reef ecosystems.
All right.
So it's a song called Pliocene.
Let's hear Cosmo Sheldrake live.
Come go rummaging, oh, where has your poor stomach been? Gone like the Pliocene, so temporary, got lost in between. Oh, here we go again. Here we go again. Here we go again. Hit the lights and leave the lid until it's over. Here we go again. Here we go again. Here we go again. Here we go again. Hit the lights and leave the lid until it's over. I danced a saraband, a waltz and a jig with the sea. We danced with our heads hung, we couldn't wake up from a dream. Here we go again, we go again. Here we go again, we go again. Hit the lights and leave the lid until it's over. Here we go again, we go again. Here we go again, we go again. Hit the lights and leave the lid until it's over. Like a butterfly, so fluttery, on what will we wean? Oh, there goes that myth again, that all of this is but a machine. So here we go again, we go again. Here we go again, we go again. Hit the lights and leave the lid until it's over. Oh, here we go again, we go again. Here we go again, we go again. Hit the lights and leave the lid until it's over.
That's called Pliocene, live performance solo, believe it or not, by Cosmo Sheldrake here in our new sound studio on this edition of the Soundcheck podcast. And that is one of many waltzes on this record. You're talking about Extinctions before, you know, I mean, we don't hear a lot. Most pop music is in four, you know, to hear a waltz, perks your ears up for a second, and to hear that many of them on one record, it can't just be a coincidence.
I don't know why it just happened like that. I had to tone it down after a while. I kept popping out with waltzes. So yeah, I don't know why really. It just happened.
Yeah, well, it, you know, there's almost a kind of childlike sense of wonder to a lot of these songs, to the way they present themselves. You may find yourself accidentally learning something from some of your songs. Is there a kind of subversive educational thing at work here?
I guess so. I mean, for me, yeah. I guess for me, it's sort of also, I see music as a way of kind of stitching stories together or shining lights in different places, or maybe like collage and weaving, taking things from one context and putting them into another context. And in between, there's a whole new kind of context that emerges, and I, yeah, in a way also I feel like it's important just to use art to grow awareness in certain ways, or draw attention to some of the sort of not so, yeah, some of the atrocities going on in the world. So yeah, I feel like it's an important way of doing it, and I think with music you can get under the radar, really. You can avoid the kind of defense mechanisms that some people get their hackles raised when you just talk about this, or some people just have trigger points at various things or don't want to. But if you can convert it into an experience where you're just in a different world or taken somewhere, then before you know it, you just might have thought about something in a different way. I don't know. Yeah.
Your voice is to me at least, and I think many people would find this, it's an immediately recognizable voice.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you, at various points now and in the past, have invited other people to sing instead of you.
Mm-hmm.
What's the attraction of writing a song and then not being the singer of it?
Oh, lots of things. Apart from anything else, you get something back. The surprise when somebody comes up with something that you wouldn't have expected, and you hear a whole new angle or possibility in a piece of music, which is really exciting. The ease when you get to a certain block and you don't know what to do, and you really run out of, you just can't imagine what next, or you've just listened to it too many times, and then just simplicity of passing it on to somebody else.
Mm.
And also, I mean, I haven't always written songs. The Moss was actually one of the first songs I ever wrote, and so it was just a lack of comfort with lyrics and words and melodies. And I mean, I've always come up with melodies, I guess, but writing lyrics and composing songs like that, it was quite an intense thing to start to do. So I guess it began out of a kind of fear of the unknown, really.
Yeah. So the singer known as Banty gets a...
Bunty, yeah.
Bunty, B-A-N-T-Y. But she's also one of the musicians, isn't she?
She's hard to pin down, really. She's an amazing singer and improviser and stuff. But no, she features on Wriggle going, go! She's doing some...
Yeah, okay.
Some shouts on that and that at the end, but mainly just singing on Mind of Rocks. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now, mentioning Wriggle, which is the song you're going to do next, the lyrics here referred to pelicans, mm-hmm. once again. So was that kind of a self-referential thing on your part?
I guess so. Yeah. It's also a reference when I was making the pelicans. I thought it'd be fun to record some pelicans. So I called up London Zoo and found out when the pelican feeding time was. And then tried to get that. It happened to be in about 20 minutes after I called them. So I just jumped on my bike and whistled down there. But I was slightly late and I just found them all kind of asleep, lazily prodding this one fish they couldn't quite stuff down their beak. So I missed that. So it was also a reference to that attempt at recording the pelicans, the feeding of the pelicans, which never really worked out.
The song, the lyrics also mention in passing the instrument known as the mellotron,
mm-hmm.
which I notice is not on the table full of electronics. I mean, that's almost like, again, coming back to the idea of extinction,
mm-hmm.
real mellotrons mm-hmm. are few and far between, and working mellotrons that you can actually take out on the road
mm-hmm.
are practically extinct, I guess, at this point.
Certainly rare and big and heavy and unwieldy, yeah. Especially traveling around,
So was any of that, you know, do you think of that, or is it just mellotron fit the rhyming scheme for that?
I mean, I use mellotrons all the time. The mellotron sounds and samples.
Right, which is how people do it these days. So
yeah.
you probably have this laptop here probably has the mellotron in it.
Yeah,
right?
So I can load in the sounds. But for me, the kind of attraction of the mellotron really is that it's maybe one of the first kind of commercial samplers, or... It was an early form of sampling and playing with tape and being able to kind of pluck sounds from one place and just trigger them back by the press of a button. So, and because a lot of the stuff I do is sample-based and using samplers, I've always been drawn to this, the sound that they make and the principle of mellotron. So
yeah, it's almost like a Pliocene sampler.
Yeah, no, yeah. Totally. So and they feature all, I write a lot of music with them included. So it kind of... felt appropriate also because I do spend a lot of time playing mellotron sounds. So.
And for folks who are wondering, that if you know the Moody Blues, the kind of string orchestra or fluty sounds that they often, they were big proponents of the mellotron back mm-hmm. in the late 60s, early 70s. So that's part of what happens in Wriggle. What is the kind of foundational sample of this song?
There's a few. It uses the fish drums again. They feature in it. It's got a recording of a pig, which plays a bit of the bass, and lots of flutes, woodwinds. I'd made it after the rest of the record, so I'd started to kind of cannibalize some of the earlier sounds that recordings I'd made. So it's I'd finished in the studio, and I just ended up chopping up bits of the things I'd already recorded, and it ended up just growing out of that. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The song is called Wriggle. Let's hear another live performance. The album is called The Much, Much, How, How, and I. It is the official debut LP of Cosmo Sheldrake. ¶¶
Did you go? Did you wriggle or roll? Did you giggle or grumble through? Tom Thumb, from where did you come? Did you toddle or run? Did you skip, trip or stumble through? Go down, let's go down, let's go down. Don't you wanna go down and wriggle on, have a sing-along. Put some pickles on and play the mellotron. Go down, let's go down, let's go down. Don't you wanna go down and wriggle on? Count to 21, go on right around and feed the pelicans. Say that. The jug or the hair, the lift or the stairs, which will it be for you? How now, the big brown cow, the bow or the bow, the spade or the plow for you? Go down, let's go down, let's go down. Don't you wanna go down and make a line, have a sing along. Put some pickles on and play the mellotron. Go down, let's go down, let's go down. Don't you wanna go down? Count to 20, go on right around and feed the pelicans.
That's called Wriggle. Cosmo Sheldrake. Live solo performance here in the studio. The same rig will be on stage at Le Poisson Rouge on Thursday evening, September 26th, when Cosmo is next back here in New York. I mean, this really is a kind of a strange hybrid of like hip-hop production with storytelling out of fairy tale or old folk songs. Mm-hmm. I mean, What did you grow up with listening to in the house?
Well, lots of stuff, really, because my mum teaches Mongolian overtone chanting, among other things.
Oh, really? Humi, as it's known.
Yeah. So she teaches that, and then also spent years working with Karlheinz Stockhausen, who's a very experimental electronic, one of the first, I guess, electronic music composers. So, I mean, there was quite a wide variety of stuff and music floating through the house. Also, my dad is a pianist and plays a lot of Bach, among other things. So there was a huge amount of music, and I grew up playing boogie woogie piano from when I was seven. So, lots of New Orleans music. Actually, I grew up on a diet of Dr. John and Professor Longhair and stuff like that.
Wow!
And lots of Bach and lots of kind of ethnographic records from all over the world, I guess.
So the kind of the chamber music quality of a lot of the arranging, the storytelling aspect, the little hints of world music in some of the samples, all of that suddenly makes sense. Mm-hmm. And you were doomed or destined to make this kind of music.
I guess so, yeah.
Cosmo, really great to have you back with us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
This is Soundcheck. That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Hear other Soundcheck podcasts and see other videos online at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.